And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
We've all heard the stories of courage and bravery of dogs as they struggle through fires to rescue their human friends or search through the rubble of collapsed buildings following the devastation of an earthquake looking for trapped humans. What drives these animals to perform such daring feats, we may never really understand. Today, we explore in depth another kind of inexplicable compassion that animals, specifically dogs, seem to possess. The animals who help disabled people live near normal lives as we visit once again Dave Ball and his dog named Hawk when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
3 years ago, I had a special guest on the Wild Side News. His name was Dave Ball, and he had a new friend, a dog named Hawk. What made this story so very significant is that just months before, Dave had almost given up hope of having a reasonable life, because since his truck accident about 3 years prior, Dave was becoming more and more paralyzed. By the time I talked with Dave, he was bound to a wheelchair. But through a stroke of luck, he'd been asked to participate in a special program by Canine Companions, which matched trained young dogs with people who needed help due to injury, accidents, or incapacitance from whatever cause. When I talked with Dave, he had many amazing stories to tell, and he'd found a new hope in life. Well, that was then. And this is 3 years later. And in our second segment, we get an update on David Ball and his dog named Hawk. And coming up, we continue our series of weekly Earth Summits, which begin right now. Welcome to the weekly Earth Summit, the most important 15 minutes on Earth. I'm your host, Sydney Wildsmith, and we continue to bring you the insights, ideas, and innovations that the planet needs right now to reconstruct the hope that underlies the foundation of a sustainable and peaceful world. But in order to get there, we must understand our place and our time. And as you know, many of the stories coming in right now suggest that we are in a phase of accelerating change. And not only we humans are having a hard time adapting, so too many of the wild creatures. We first welcome Greg Butcher, who is National Audubon's Director of Bird Conservation, who gives us one of the latest updates on how our native bird species are faring in our rush to the future. Greg?
We put together information from the Breeding Bird Survey, which is run in the month of June, and the Christmas Bird Counts, which are run near Christmas time in early winter, to look at the population trends for all the birds of North America over the last 40 years. And we were surprised to find that there are a number of very common birds that have been shown very severe declines over those last 40 years. At least 20 birds have lost over 50% of their population over that 40-year period. A study was just published this month, the month of June 2007, and we're getting publicity on it now. The number one declining bird in our study was the northern bobwhite, which is a quail, which is found in open grassland and shrubland habitats throughout the eastern United States. And we had a similar group of species that like grasslands and shrublands, very similar habitat requirements to the northern bobwhite. So we've seen declines in meadowlarks, in loggerhead shrikes, and in a number of sparrow species, including grasshopper sparrow. For these birds, the main issue we're concerned about is habitat loss. There's a variety of habitats that are having some problems where they're either disappearing completely or they're being fragmented by roads and power lines and things like that. And we've also found signs that some of these birds are suffering from global warming. We have several species that breed up in the open tundra and whose populations are declining. We put out this kind of an early warning, since these are common birds. They're not birds that we really expect to go extinct. And so we feel like we've put out the report in time where people can take corrective action. And that's really a major focus of the report, is giving people ideas on what they can do to reverse these declines and hopefully get some of these bird populations increasing again. We hope people will start working in their backyard, doing things to make your own yard more bird-friendly, especially planting vegetation, native vegetation, that's good for birds, and trying to find vegetation that kind of fits in with the neighborhood. So if you're near open fields, you know, planting tall grasses, if you're near shrublands, so planting that kind of stuff, or trying to recreate a woodland environment can all be really good for birds. Also, we have an important bird areas program in the United States, and we're looking for people to volunteer at their local important bird areas, whether it's a state park or a national wildlife refuge or some other habitat like that that's proven to be important for birds. There's a lot of ways we can band together with our neighbors and do good things at these areas that are very important for our birds. And then we also would like to see people get involved in public action, become a grassroots activist, help improve legislation at the local, state, or national level, whether it's better habitat protections or helping to improve the prospect for global warming, so that reducing greenhouse gases, taking these kinds of public actions, it'll really make a difference for all of us. We have a website. It's www.audubon.org, A-U-D-U-B-O-N. And right at the top right now, we have the report on the declining common birds. We also have a public policy section and a way, you know, for people to get involved in our public policy actions. So a really nice variety of bird information available on the Audubon website. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. I know this wake-up call has inspired me to consider working with my neighbors to establish a neighborhood bird sanctuary through backyard plantings and maintaining cover and nesting sites, and trying to reduce the number of pesticides we add to our yards each year. We can make a difference. Our regular contributor, Ben Lowe, has some personal thoughts about that. Ben?
I grew up listening to Peter, Paul, and Mary. I know it's not my generation, but my dad really likes them. One of my favorite songs they sing is called If I Had a Hammer. Perhaps you've heard it. The theme is easy to pick up. If I had a hammer, I'd hammer out justice, freedom, and love all day. If I had a bell, I'd ring it out all day. If I had a song, I'd sing it out all day. And it struck me once. That's what I've often sounded like. Well, if I had more money, I'd buy a hybrid car. If only I were in charge, I'd mandate campus-wide recycling. If only I understood global warming better, I'd do something. And the ifs go on and on. We need to move beyond the wishful if. The Peter, Paul, and Mary song ends by going, well, I do have a hammer, I do have a bell to ring, and I do have a song to sing. Amen. Let's worry less about what we don't have and pay more attention to what we do have and can do. I can take public transportation more often. I can recycle my bottles and paper. I can change my light bulbs to compact fluorescents. We can all do something. Now, what is the something that you can still do?
With a spirit like Ben's, we can change the world. If we incorporate these changes into our world, we will be rewarded in many ways. Ethologist and animal advocate Dr. Beckhoff provides his take on how we can maximize those benefits. Dr. Beckhoff?
One of the things we've talked about in the past is watching dogs at a dog park to figure out what they're doing and also to see whether they may have some moral sensibility. And so a lot of questions I get from people all the time is, well, how can I become a better observer? Well, one way you become a better observer is you just observe and you practice. You don't write anything down. You don't talk into a tape recorder. You don't film through a camera. You watch the animals. After you watch the animals, you then may be talking to a tape recorder, take notes by hand, take some video. But there's no substitute for detailed observation. There's no substitute for watching the animals in their world, whatever it may be, a dog park or a wildlife park, or maybe if you're fortunate to see them out in nature. One of the other things I always say to people is observation and attention are synonymous. And I'll say, well, when you're feeling down, what do you sometimes do? And, you know, innumerable people say, oh, I go for a walk. Or I feel down, but I heard a bird sing. Or I felt down and I just watched two dogs play. And so I say to them, open up, you know, open your senses, open your heart to these experiences, because really we are still very ancient in our hearts and our heads, our brains, in terms of evolution. I mean, we do amazing things, you know, and we do more and more amazing things over the years. But the minute I tell people that it's a function of mindfulness, it's a function of being mindfully attentive in the moment, it's amazing the transformations that you see. And they begin to appreciate why birdsong makes them feel good. They begin to appreciate why being out in nature feels good, why seeing trees feel good or birds singing in trees feel good. I think it just comes down to attention, mindfulness, and of course the result of that is that you put away all the stuff that's caused you stress. Sometimes when I'm just feeling a little over the hill and I just go, oh, I just have too much going on, or there's something going on in my life that I don't really like, those are the times when I ride my bike the most or take hikes. And it's almost counterintuitive, because I'll say I have so much to do, but I then need to make the time to rekindle. And it's meditative. You know, there's many forms of meditation, and mine is to relax, sometimes close my eyes. I can meditate when I'm driving. I can meditate on my bike. I can meditate on my couch. I can meditate in bed or on my porch. But one of the best places for me to meditate, if you will, or be attentive and really, really focus on what's happening is just outside.
I'll be talking again with Mark next week to hear of his latest efforts at expanding the dimensions of human awareness about animal awareness. The process of integrating with our living world can and should be an ongoing state of mind. Dr. Thomas Lovejoy is a preeminent spokesman for maintaining a panoramic integration with the wonder. Dr. Lovejoy.
I think biological diversity does all kinds of stuff for us. You know, it underpins us biologically, it performs ecosystem services, it provides sort of basic encyclopedia about living systems on Earth. But it's also, you know, it's just extraordinarily beautiful and wonderful. I think one of the most important things each and every person should do with some frequency is just stop for a minute and, in a sense, smell the roses of the diverse planet on which we live. Because, you know, anytime you really stop and look at a plant or an animal, how it's put together and how it works, it's enthralling. And to lose any of it is worse than the worst book burning one can imagine. It's a wonderful, beautiful, inspiring world, and we should treasure it.
Thank you, Dr. Lovejoy. The amazing thing about all of this is that people come to this challenge with everything it takes to do the right thing. It's just that some of us have grown a bit lazy or have forgotten how easy it is. And that's where our master change artist and environmental healer, Dr. Matthew Sleeth, brings his years as an MD and applies them now to a bit of preventative medicine for planet Earth. Dr. Sleeth.
Every year, the Ichthus Music Festival takes place in Wilmore, Kentucky. 20,000 attendees enjoy 3 days of camping and fellowship under the bright Kentucky skies. Up until now, the thousands of bottles and cans used by the concert goers have been thrown in the trash. A few weeks before this year's event, Andy Bacy, a dean at Asbury College, told me of his dream to recycle the mountain of beverage containers produced at the festival. I had a U.S. group called Christians in Conservation. My group committed to recycling at the festival, and along with our student chapter and students from Asbury, we made hurried plans to do so. It wasn't easy. Our state does not have a culture of recycling. On the first day of the concert, more than half of the bottles and cans were being thrown in the trash, despite our recycling bins, which were right next to the trash cans. The recycling volunteers from Asbury and Christians in Conservation began going through the trash, rescuing the recyclables from amongst ketchup, diapers, and half-eaten cotton candy. This act of love and service worked its transformation on the crowd. Soon, many were heard to say, "I can't believe you care enough to dig through the trash." At the end of 3 days, we recycled 78,000 bottles and realized 400 pounds of aluminum cans. This represents a fossil fuel savings of 1,500 gallons of gasoline. But more important was the change in the 20,000 attendees at the music concert. At the end, a majority of those people used the recycling bins. What changed their mind and behavior wasn't a slick ad campaign or guilt, but the loving example set by the volunteers.
Thank you, Matthew. It is such a welcome sign that people of all faiths are awakening to the gift of the life of the earth, as well as their spiritual life, and finding the truth of the mystery that binds it all together. As Matthew points out, real change often happens best when people take their own initiative to do the right thing. Our next guest offers a gentle symbol of change, which he's crafted from his rural home in Minnesota. Great ideas are often born in the cornfields and piney woods of the common mind. We welcome Fulton Hansen to the Weekly Earth Summit. Fulton?
Yeah. Hello. My name is Fulton Hansen. I live in Pine County, Minnesota. About 16 months ago, we came up with an idea as a family. We were concerned, as everybody is, about energy issues, and we saw the relationship between energy and a lot of the things that were confronting us as a country, as a global society. What we did, we took an orange slow-moving vehicle symbol, which you see on the back of tractors and wagons and buggies, and we greened that symbol, produced a very graphically perfect triangle similar to the orange symbol, and on the three sides we put drive, easy, conserve. Extremely simple message, and the idea was to put this on the back of a car as an educator. Put a pine tree in the center, which symbolized Pine County, and the family went out to let our neighbors know that we had this. And the idea was is that if we could slow people down just a little bit when they're driving, it might be just that baby step that we need to bring them in, make activists out of them, help them become participants, and they're going to save fossil fuels, and they're going to save a little money on gasoline, etc. So that's what we did. We started off, first printing was about 1,000 of magnets. Actually, we did car magnets at first until I realized that on the back of a lot of the newer cars, it was plastic, so that didn't work. We decided to go with stickers. I'm glad we made that switch because they cost less and we can distribute a lot more of them. So we undertook this as a nonprofit venture for a family to try to get the word out that this would be a good thing to do for the planet, be a good thing to do for people in the future, and be a good thing to do for our grandchildren. So just to give you an example, when I have an older car, as most people in Pine County do. Be a while before the Toyota Priuses get to our area, but what I do is I drive my 1994 large automobile. I won't even tell you what kind it is. It's almost embarrassing, but it's a big old car. And we get 31 miles to the gallon driving that vehicle at 55. If I drive that at 70 to 75, I'm looking at somewhere around 21. That made quite an impression on me and an impression on a lot of other people. We didn't realize actually how much you do save by just driving your vehicle in the sweet spot. The sweet spot is that area where you get maximum efficiency as your car goes down the road. And so we decided to put these in print, and we have over 15,000 around Minnesota and Wisconsin, and actually have been picked up by a couple of foreign countries. Mexico has produced 3,000 of these and distributed them in Spanish in central Mexico. Dial us up, greenslowmovingvehicles.com, and we will send them to you. You can order them right there, or just call me on the telephone. And my number is on the webpage, but I'll give it to you again. It's 320-384-9967. Simple, it's free, it's conservation, and it's effective. People really like this idea, and it gives them something to participate in. So anyhow, that's about all I've got for Minnesota right now. So if anybody has any questions, please call me. We'll be glad to get some out going into your area. Thank you.
Thank you, Fulton. The most amazing thing about the future is that it is our future, and we can change the world one mind at a time. And that is the message that our renowned Earth Watcher and researcher, Dr. Charles Kennel, so wisely shares. Dr. Kennel?
10 years ago, when I was at NASA and talking about these issues, some people, in a casual social context, came up to me and said, doesn't it bother you that people just don't believe you? And I said, yes, but I said that at that time that if we scientists are right, and I think we are, then events will occur, climate events will occur, and people will sign up one by one, and they will see. And I think in many parts now of the at least the advanced world, in Europe and increasingly in the U.S., people are beginning to see. This is the beginning of progress. But it also means that, to my way of thought, we should move on from advocacy, which is important, but it's not the only thing any longer, and we really should start discussing solutions. And I think people, those people that are turned off by the overwhelming nature and scope of the problem that is outlined by the people who necessarily use the scope of the problem as part of their advocacy, people who are turned off or feel there's nothing to be done, will be attracted more by a philosophy that says, we're starting to do something, there are solutions out there, we've got to try them, and we're going to. And those people will get interested when they see us getting practical about it.
Thank you, Dr. Kennel. Today's Weekly Earth Summit provides a pocketful of great and inspiring ideas by some of the world's greatest voices of the Earth. Now, go on out and share the bounty. This is Sidney Wildsmith inviting you to join us next week and every week for the Weekly Earth Summit. And talk about inspiring. Wait until you hear our feature story about Dave Ball and his canine companion, Hawk. That's coming up, along with our Nature News update, when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.